Happy Bitcoin Wednesday, freaks. It's your boy Odell here for the second dispatch from the new studio in 2 days. Extremely excited for this conversation. We got a great crew here. As always, I want to thank the freaks for supporting the show and keeping it ad-free and sponsor-free, purely focused on actionable discussion. You guys make it possible. I really do appreciate you. And another huge shout-out for the freaks who join us in the live chat and contribute. You make this show unique. Reminder, if you want to join the live chat, you go to citadeldispatch.com and click that citadel.chat button. If you want to support the show, you can support the show at citadeldispatch.com, or you can support it via podcasting 2.0 apps like Fountain Podcasts and Breeze. As we have gone over in the past episodes, I am now reading out boostergrams. If you send a boostergram, the highest ones in terms of sats get read out live on air. I'm extremely impressed and humbled that people within a day have sent new boostergrams. We have Roughneck Miner at 100,000 sats said, keep up the great work. Hope this helps. It does help. I appreciate you, Roughneck. We have Letter 6173 saying, I support your value for value transaction and would also like to contribute. That's also 100,000 sats. Someone boosted underneath him, which I didn't even know you could do, as a reply, and said baller boost for 4,900 sats. And then we have Law Bitcoin, 25,000 sats. Damn, I've missed Bitcoin Tuesdays. Thanks for putting out the great podcast and to the awesome guests. I've learned a ton from you guys. Chrysalis, first time boosting, sending some value for value improvements to the audio quality. Let's go. Anyway, thank you guys. There's some more boosts there. You can read them in any podcasting 2.0 app by clicking the episode and clicking the boost button to read them. So with all that said, let's get right down to business. Today, we'll be talking about bootstrapping a Bitcoin circular economy and the Beef Initiative. I got four awesome dudes here in the brand new studio at Bitcoin Park with me to have this conversation. I'm looking forward to it, boys. So first off, we have Texas Slim. How's it going, Texas Slim?
Hey, Matt, doing well. It's going to be hard to leave Nashville for sure after we're sitting here.
I love to hear it. Slow and steady, Tennessee yeah. Slim coming to the park.
There you go. You got that trademark now.
We have Ryan here from the Missouri Beef Initiative. How's it going, Ryan?
Okay, man, real good.
Dude, it's a pleasure to have you here. It was a little bit of a surprise to me. You just walked in about 20 minutes ago. So.
Yeah, what'd I say? I think I just knocked now.
Am I at the Bitcoin house? Oh, yeah, he's like, I'm Satoshi. I was like, who the fuck is this guy? We have Michael Atwood here from Oshi, return guest, good friend. How's it going, Michael?
It's going great, man. Good to be here. Good to record face-to-face.
Fuck yeah. I think we're going to do face-to-face going forward with Dispatch. It's just such a better vibe.
Oh, yeah.
And we have Carlinho from Ibex, who's been working in El Salvador on an education initiative. How's it going, Carlinho?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me. Love flying north to come to the south.
Fuck yes. Why north to come to the south? It's a pleasure to have you. So guys, where do we want to start here? What are you guys thinking?
Well, let's just talk about bootstrapping and circular economies and, you know, what we're doing within the Beef Initiative is, you know, from the very beginning, it's about decentralizing our food supply and how do we get there? How do we look at market access of how we feed ourselves? And how we leverage Bitcoin and all the technology stacks that are going on right now that we're kind of innovating collectively right now. I think that this point of the road that we've come to, this is a crossroad of we're taking it up a notch. And I think just letting everybody know where we've come from, the relationships that we all have in here and how they've kind of coalesced together in a symbiotic way is the most fascinating thing with me, because this has been a ride. This has been a journey like with me and Michael. It's been, 7 months, Michael, that we started talking with each other?
Yeah, maybe it would even be We should talk about that later, how that all came about.
Yeah, but it's moving fast, but we're in a perfect position. You know, here today in Nashville, we get to kind of release to the world like where we are and the confidence we have moving forward. So
fuck yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, it's
vibes are high, momentum's building.
It's a no-brainer. I mean, I drove into Nashville, you know, and I was freaking grinning. I was like, man, this is gonna be tough. And I was like, I'm gonna kind of send a message to Matt that we need a headquarters here in Nashville. So what do you say?
Let's fucking go.
Beef Initiative in Nashville, Tennessee, right?
Yeah, the Tennessee Beef Initiative out of Bitcoin Park in Nashville.
That's what we're going to do. This is the day, isn't it? I mean, that we get to announce to everybody that this is a node building tour that I'm on right now, and I'm calling the Texas to Tennessee barn raising tour.
When was the first time you reached out to me? Was that 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago?
Yeah, just about 3 or 4 weeks ago. You know, and I needed to come with a lot of, you know, I wanted to come with a lot of respect and everything because I didn't want to shill on you. And I was like, man, we got to have proof of work here. So, you know, Marty took a liking to what I was doing early on. And then I told you, I guess a couple of weeks ago, I was like, it's time for you and I to talk, Matt.
Yeah, our boy Marty reached out to me. He's like, Slim says it's time. And I was like, I'm fucking ready. I remember Slim called me and we had a conversation. We like talked for like an hour. Cause when he gets going, you can't stop him.
No.
And I got off the phone. I turned to my wife and I was just like, that was one of the best conversations I've ever had. We're going to fucking do this thing.
That's what I like to hear. And that's why I don't like to step up on anybody unless we're ready. And, you know, that's what Michael and I have had a lot of pains because I've been through an innovation cycle in technology before when I was younger. I'm a little bit older than you guys. You know, I'm generational X. And I know that during this time of innovation, you better come with proof of work. You don't shill your bullshit to people because you get stepped on in the long run. So saying that I'm going to call up Matt O'Dell and you saying that's one of the best conversations, I mean, that's what all this is about right now. I mean, we're out there changing people's lives and we're out there making these kick-ass relationships, these friendships, these brotherhoods. And it comes with proof of work. It comes with respect.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what a lot of people miss because, you know, Bitcoin is obviously a tech project. It's an open source code base and people get stuck in the code. But ultimately, it's a movement of people, right? And it comes down to people to actually use these tools, support each other and work together to actually make any kind of real change.
And that with what I do within, you know, ranching itself within agricultural cell, you can't be successful, you know, living a device screen life. You know, you can't do it. You have to. And my motto was from day one, let's go shake some ranchers' hands. And that's same with Bitcoin. And what you guys have done here in Nashville, I mean, this collective of spirit that's basically built out this fascinating building that we're sitting in right now is about looking at people eye to eye, face to face, shaking hands, meeting people from all over the world and, you know, saying, hey, let's build this circular economy based on this ethos.
Let's fucking go. So, Michael, I mean, I know you've been, you know, heads down trying to build a Bitcoin circular economy. Where do you fall into this whole Beef Initiative mission?
Yeah. So we, Slim and I got connected probably about 6 or 7 months ago. It was through Kyle Murphy.
Yes.
But actually, my co-founder of Oshi, JP, he had been following Slim's, your blog posts and everything.
Yeah. The Substack.
Yeah. The Substack. And he was like really interested in it. He's like, hey man, we need to reach out to this guy. We got to reach out to this guy. We got to get him like plugged into Lightning and like get him like, you know, we're creating Oshi and it's like, we need some beef.
Like, exactly.
We got to get this in. Cause JP is, he's awesome. He's really into all the regenerative ag and like pure protein and all of that. Right. And for me personally, I had actually started reading some books. I got like shilled, you know, different regenerative ags and like stop treating your soil like dirt. And like, I totally got, you know, ranch pilled in a way. And I was kind of on the beginning stages of that journey. And then Kyle Murphy was like, hey, I got someone you need to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And JP had reached out to you like the day before that too. We were finally like, all right, let's do this. So then, yeah, we chatted. We had a long chat. And from there, it was literally like, all right, I'm doing proof of work. I see you're doing proof of work.
Yeah, let's move
forward. Let's get this thing rolling. Like, let's branch out here. I mean, I was predominantly focused on small businesses, small, medium-sized businesses. I wasn't going out and shaking farmers' hands. And that's the beautiful thing about Bitcoin. It comes in from all different directions. And, it, you know, collectively, we can all make this happen.
I love the phrase, shake your rancher's hand or shake your farmer's hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's infectious and viral. Like, as soon as you said it to Marty, he wouldn't shut up about it. Every episode, every time, every conversation it didn't have to be a recorded conversation. He just would always just drop it into like, just having a, I'm like, oh, I'm going down to Florida. He's like, you're going to shake your farmer's hand in Florida? Or just throw it in there.
It's funny. I remember there's a couple of phrases that I came up with, and it reminds me of my childhood in West Texas, you know, hanging out with farmers and ranchers. And if you did not know how to shake a farmer and rancher's hand, you got your ass kicked. And so, and that's, it is, it's very definitive because it teaches you that you have to look at people in the eyes and you have to show some respect. You can't hide behind anything when right. You're talking to somebody like that. So, you know, I came up with harvest of deception, shake your rancher's hand, source of the seed. You know, why do you desire what you desire? And if you go through that sequence of phrases, they're all starting to stick in somebody's mind now. And it's kind of a jumping off point.
And you know, like Marty and I went down. So Slim introduced us to Cole. I don't remember exactly how that introduction happened or what way it happened. But then we went down there and he shook his rancher's hand. That was the first moment, I think.
It was.
That was the moment. And it was cool. You know, Cole showed us around the ranch. I got him set up with OpenNode at the time to accept Bitcoin payments. And we paid in Bitcoin right then and there.
Fuck yeah.
I mean, like, so it's kind of like this thing, like Slim's doing the introduction. He's sending the signal, putting out the signal. And in what capacity has Oshi been helping? It's been more of like the tech side of things, like trying to make sure that that expertise there,
right,
to make sure everything, people get onboarded, people get going. And
well, this is what I was saying to Slim the other day off air, is it's a really powerful partnership because you have Bitcoiners on one side and then you have ranchers on the other side, and we're very much ideologically aligned, but we're very different and we have very different skill sets, right? And both sides they wish they had the skill sets of the other side. So it's truly a value for value relationship, right? Where you have the ranchers on one side, you know, helping us learn, you know, real skills to not be just nerdy city boys, right? And then you have us on the other side helping them onboard into this global economy that's independent of corporations and governments. And the mesh of the two is insanely powerful.
That's what I saw in the very beginning, and that's how I was able to reflect on my childhood, knowing that how a rancher thinks, how a rancher has to operate within the system in which we've, you know, kind of evolved into. One thing that, and I think a lot of Bitcoiners are finding this out, and you saw it, especially with that statement right there, you had that moment of clarity that they think in a decentralized way. They have to survive. You know, that Bitcoin ethos is already in their mindset. And so once we can learn how to bridge that gap, you know, in the beginning, that's what the Beef Initiative is. It's a bridge. It's a bridge into those two parties that are trying to be involved with each other. They don't quite know how to do it. So let's build that protocol that we can actually start understanding together. And we leverage each other's expertise, their heritage, legacy, moving forward, innovation, technology stacks. You know, everything does come together and it all goes basically down to the soil, down to the cow itself, the animal itself. And here we are. And I didn't know where it was going to go. I just said I was going to buy a freaking cow with Bitcoin and go take it across Texas and share it with my friends. And this is where we are right now. So we're selling beef through freaking Beef Initiative with Bitcoin. We have proof of work. And you know, what's cool about this is Cole yesterday on air, he says, man, I've traded beef for a full Bitcoin. He's a full Bitcoiner now.
Whole coiner.
Whole coiner. Ryan, I want to pull you into this conversation. So how did you get connected with Slim? What's your story?
So I was recapping this the other day. It was January 8th. Curry went on Rogan and name dropped him. And I was in the middle of a week. I had taken a week off my job. I'm a sales manager at a car dealership. And I had taken a week off for me and my wife to see if we could feed our family without grocery stores, you know. So we were coming out. I got two kids. I was just hyper aware all of a sudden my responsibility didn't end at the grocery store, you know. So I took this week off and I was like driving around our rural community. I live very city life in a rural community and realized how hard it was. You know, there's lots of signs with eggs for sale. But without that relationship there, when do you stop and get the eggs? They're not home. They've got a day job, whatever that is. You end up with no eggs or you end up at Dollar General, which is
right.
Usually what happens. So I reached out of trying out at the time. I was kind of scrambling to build a little supply chain for my family. I kind of established this milk route between me and a dairy farmer. And so I was running twice a week, illegally delivering raw milk, to my family and friends. And I was kind of using,
we got Jason Bourne over here.
Yeah. Thankfully, in Missouri, we have some very promising laws that protect, for the most part, our consumption of raw farm products. But it is a bit of a gray area. So overcoming that was what we had been focused on, me, my wife, some friends of mine, and building out sort of a delivery model for local goods, because farmers and ranchers are busy. And, you know, it needs to be convenient or it wasn't going to work for me. And so I reached out and talked, and I said, I think I'm going to steal your brand and start the Missouri Beef Initiative. And he said, go for it. And we whipped up a website, a very, very rudimentary website, planned an event for May 1st. And we just threw all of our like local energy at trying to build an intelligence network. You were talking about sayings you came up with. Ours was food intelligence.
I love that.
I'm not a farmer.
Food intelligence is strong.
I can build an intelligence network though. And that's where it started for us. And we're rocking and rolling.
So not a farmer, not a Bitcoiner.
Bitcoiner. I came into this as a maxi.
Let's fucking go.
Yeah. I came in as a maxi. Bitcoin led me to truth. Truth showed me the deception, and the deception freaked me the fuck out. I was scared about how I was going to feed my family. I'm not scared now. I've got a local supply chain built.
It's empowering.
Proof of work.
Carlinho, how you feeling over there?
Good, man. I live a city life. I live in Guatemala City. It's a major metropolis in Central America, and I'm very disconnected from my food sources. And I want to contribute to reducing the deception, you know. And so I hope that the technology we're building at IBEX is helpful for that. And I'm particularly passionate about the education piece and how, you know, maybe right now Bitcoiners have skills that ranchers don't. But I'd put money on if we do certain things right within a generation, that's no longer the case.
Right.
And the Bitcoiners better get their shit together.
So we got to get all the information from the ranchers before they get the Bitcoin information.
Yeah, it's a lot easier 100%. To learn how to be a Bitcoiner than to learn how to be a rancher, I'd wager.
Don't tell them that. So, Carlinho, first and foremost, I'm assuming you haven't shook your rancher's hand yet.
I have not.
Wait, you got to get that done
first. I got to do that.
So let's talk a little bit about your education experience in San Salvador. I mean, you guys are doing a proper Bitcoin course and diploma over there. What have you learned? You know, what has worked? What hasn't worked?
So we're still learning. We're on week 8, I believe, this Saturday of the first deployment of the Bitcoin diploma, which is our contribution to the first high school education curricula that I know of, which is in use in a public school in El Salvador, in this community called San Marcos, which is a satellite community that feeds into San Salvador. And so our kids are between the ages of 16 and 19. We're starting with the first class of about 50. And the curriculum we built is a 9-week class with a 10-week pass, try again exam. And so it's very skills based. And I think doing it in a pass, try again kind of format, the more I think about it, I'm a swimmer. I love to swim. And I think I consistently think of Bitcoin as like learning how to swim. It's if you had to do an exam with a teenager as to whether or not they knew how to swim, it'd be pretty, you know, pass fail kind of
proof of work shows real quick.
Right? It's like you just check the kid in the pool and very quickly you'll realize whether or not he needs help, right? And I think that if we boil Bitcoin down to the essentials, maybe it can be like that. And it boggles my mind how we have built a global education industry that doesn't teach high schoolers how to swim, for example. That's not required. Seems like a pretty relevant skill if one day it could save your life. And I can...
It doesn't make you a good citizen.
Well...
it doesn't make you a good subject.
Yeah.
But it will keep you from dying that one time when you really needed it. And I think Bitcoin is the same way. You might be able to live your life without knowing how to Bitcoin, but that one time might be the difference between life and death. And so just like swimming, it's the kind of thing where you just need to work at it. And maybe some people will not be able to do it, but that's a very small percentage of folks. And if you fail, you can just, you know, keep at it, you know. So that's what we're focusing on, and hopefully the example that we learn from in El Salvador will give us you know the base to launch it in a much more global way, so that anyone, particularly young kids, can just pick it right up.
That's fucking awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I love the education part of it. I mean, we've talked, Matt, you and I keep on talking, and usually we're ending our sentences with education.
Always. It always comes down to the education.
It is. And people kind of look at education as, you know, it's a pain in the ass, but actually education into, you know, to cow pilling and to Bitcoining, you know, it's a fascinating.
I like ranch pilling better than cow pilling.
Well, you know, that's what happened yesterday on the recording with Cole and Jason, and, you know, coming from the ranchers themselves.
They like cow pilling?
They to like
me,
cow
to pilling. To me, it sounds like I'm drugging cows.
I know,
like,
exactly.
Like the cow wasn't watching his drink, so I like to put something.
What we're going to do, we're starting it right here. We're going to have a contest. Is it going to be ranch pilling or is it going to be cow pilling?
Well, the market will decide, but exactly. I think ranch pilling is going to win that one.
I like ranch pilling. You know, Cole said cow pilling, but I think, you know, he's just been too busy right now because he's opened up a processing center. So he's definitely, you know, learning how to cow pill in a different way. So we'll see if it's ranch pilling or cow pilling. But anyways, going back to the, you know, the education side of all of this, what we're going to, you know, the most important thing is, I tell everybody this is a lifestyle within the Beef Initiative because you're getting closer to the source of your seed of nutrition. And it's something that's based on heritage, tradition, and all kinds of different legacies that have come before us. We get to leverage that and we get to kind of project it into the future and be the modern day rancher. And the rancher, modern day rancher, gets to ranch pill, cow pill, you know, everybody else. There's a symbiotic educational series that are going on here that is 100% natural. And what it is, it's based on, you know, proof of work. It's based on like the swimming. That's experiential training is what that is. And we have to bring that to Bitcoin. We have to bring it to the ranchers. And how we do that is it seems like it's a free flowing, you know, apparatus that we're developing here.
Yeah, I would say it's critically important, obviously, the education. And then I think sometimes we forget whenever we talk about education, oftentimes we just think about like speaking, you know, talking at someone.
Yeah.
We're really good at that in Bitcoin for sure. Like we are really good at that. Like
shout out to Bitcoin Twitter.
Yeah. Shout out to Bitcoin. Like, we will never shut up about Bitcoin, but I think we forget like in kindergarten, it's show and tell. You know, that's also how you educate people. So you got to show them, like you have to be like, hey, look, let me send you like 10 sat, whatever. It doesn't matter. Things like that. I have noticed, you know, in talking with business owners and talking with their staff, it makes it so much more simplified for them. Like it's real.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, I can.
Yeah. There's almost like a laziness that has swooped into Bitcoin a little bit where it's in the early days of Bitcoin, it was always, okay, let me send you your first sats. You know, let's play around with the wallet, get comfortable with it. Now it's more, It's like, oh, go to this website and deal with it yourself, right? Rather than hold their hand for the beginning, at least for friends, family, people that are in your local community. Like person to person is insanely powerful. And it just makes people so much more comfortable because they're not just looking at like a faceless website.
Yeah, insanely powerful. I mean, and maybe it's because maybe people in general have just become a bit more lazy. And I'm not talking about like the Bitcoin community. I'm also talking about the people who we are trying to shill this to.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about this yesterday. Just like our society has bred this lack of personal responsibility. And, you know, Bitcoin's all about personal responsibility. And so it's a sea change of a concept in your head. But that is something that ranchers already get. They already have to live a personal responsibility life. So I think it's an easier job connect with them. And then to combine that with, shaking your rancher's hand, there's also just, you know, people have gotten less social or less confident. I don't know, like the idea of like, before I heard the shake a rancher's hand, the one I liked was firm handshakes. Mm-hmm. You know, firm handshakes is a meme. And a lot of people don't, you know, give firm handshakes. They don't look you in the eye. Mm. And it's a symptom of the societal issues that have compounded over and over. And you basically, everyone needs to get rewired to this personal responsibility, to this, you know, personal connection kind of situation. And that's not going to be an easy process. Like that will take time.
No, and it brings up a good point. Whenever I was in technology in Austin, I was doing some work for telecommunications. Our company had gotten bought out by telecommunications, and I got basically assigned to do a project. It was during time that we're having more devices in everybody's hands. And one thing that I was decided to do was write a research paper on the division of interpersonal communication skills. And that was about in 2004, I believe. And since then, you know, we're close to whatever, 20 years. But what that has done is led me to remember back in those days and how we used to shake people's hands and how we looked at each other's in the eye. Our society has been socially engineered to be divided in certain ways. And with the devices in our hands, the screens that we look at, the division of actually being able to have a really good conversation has been hijacked. And in to be able to do that hardwiring, rewiring, that reset, the best way to do it is going out there and shaking a damn rancher's hand. I mean, but people
wonder how many times we're going to say that.
Well, we're going to, yeah, it's trademarked, I guess now, huh? But what we have to remember is like you ask somebody, there's an intimidation factor there, you know, and if you can overcome the intimidation factor and kind of stand on your two feet with some freaking confidence and, you know, grow some balls and go out there and make some new relationships, all it's going to do is better your life. It's going to educate you, and you're going to go down a freaking a roadmap that's only going to make your life better. And us Bitcoiners have to take that freaking responsibility. I mean, it is about accountability. It is a sense of intentionality that has some agency to it right now, because if you're in Bitcoin and you really think that, you know, no matter how good of a Bitcoiner you are, how educated you are, if you're leaving out food, market access, and how you're going to get market access to feeding yourself and your family, and you're not bringing food into the conversation, guess what? You're going to get left behind. And this is going to start playing out. And that's what I think people are starting to see, especially in the Bitcoin community. And I was talking to Cole with KNC Cattle yesterday. And last week he came up to me and he goes, Slim, I said, I have to give you something. He goes, you're ingenious for doing and starting with the Bitcoin community. He goes, I didn't understand in the beginning why you did this.
Stay humble, Slim.
Yeah, I am. And I'm about to say it. And he said, how did you do that? And I said, man, I just know how much that you guys needed a voice. And the best voice that we can give are these guys in the Bitcoin community, because what they believe in is truth and honesty and proof of work. And that's exactly what you are. And so that's, you know, it was something that was very, it was a compliment coming from a rancher, and that meant the world to me. I mean, it that means a lot. Whenever you have a rancher that's got your back, you know, you're eating, you know, that they're tough as shit. You know, that if you need work done, if you need to network, if you need something, all you got to do is make that phone call. You hook up with them and here you go. You're off to another stage of proof of work that whatever you need to take care of.
Yeah. And literally, like, people just need to, this is what I do. I spend a lot of my time talking with business owners about how they can accept Bitcoin or why they should accept Bitcoin, and just showing them You know, we spend a lot of time on the product side of things, but it's really just learning like how we can kind of break through and get to these ranchers or small business owners or whatever it may be. The tools are there. And like you're saying, like, people love talking about Bitcoin. I mean, people love bashing people on Twitter. Like, it's fun, you mm-hmm. know, whenever they say something off the wall about Bitcoin. But like, that needs to make its way out. But, you know, just show a little grace, though, because most of these people, what I'm finding out is they are completely ignorant. Yeah. What's going on outside of Bitcoin or outside of Bitcoin Twitter? Like, no one knows what's going on with Bitcoin. I talked to a guy the other day. He was like, yeah, what I almost bought some back in like 2009. I mean, you know, they always have this story. It's the same story. And he was like, what is it at now? Like $1,000 or something? And I'm like, no, it's not. It's about 30,000. And he's like, what? No way. Really? I mean, people, they have businesses to run. They're busy. Like, they don't have time to pay attention to this like we do. But what's really interesting is now, and I think it has a lot to do with Beef Initiative too, mm-hmm. is like people are literally going out to their farmers markets. They're going, hey, Michael, like, hey, or they're probably talking to you and then maybe you send it to me like, hey, I got this. I got this guy that wants to sell beef or this or that or eggs or whatever. And how do I get him set up with Bitcoin? And I'm like, I got you. Like, I'll get it set up. I recommend IBEX, like, first and foremost at this point. Like,
thank you.
Hands down.
Yes.
By the way, just like, you know, a totally like honest plug there. And yeah, so that's just something that I highly recommend. Get out there.
Yeah. And you mentioned the social engineering about how to keep people from having honest conversations. Mm-hmm. I think one of the main tools that at least the financial system has used is the idea of complexity and like talking down, especially to folks that haven't had access to higher quality education you can't understand this. Like, this is beyond your grasp. This idea of finance is something that's only reserved for the elites, essentially. And that's where the importance of just dispelling that complexity and saying, make sure, shake your rancher's hand and hopefully take the opportunity to show them that they can just write down 12 words and protect their value and their family's patrimony and build generational wealth. Just doing that so that you're not talking about, you know, don't go into the complexity of how the financial system works and all that. Just, you know, let me just show you a skill. This is like riding a bike. This is like learning how to swim. Like, every single person in the planet can do this. You don't even, and what we're finding with teenagers, is you don't need to know English. I mean, it'd be awesome if we could start getting more access to other language, tools, but you can do this. And there's, like Mike was saying earlier, there's actually a much higher threshold or barrier to entry for Bitcoiners to become ranchers than there is for mm-hmm. ranchers to become Bitcoiners. You know, mm-hmm. so shake that hand and try to bring them along and just cross that chasm. That's really just, you know, a mental barrier that's been built up by this engineering, and it's just one person at a time.
Yeah, and another important thing to remember is when you go out and you shake a rancher's hand, you're offering a relationship, an economy. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about building our own economy because the fiat one's collapsing. And so if we're going to do that, you know, it's not, you go shake your farmer's hand and then you go shake it again and you go shake it again and you start buying your groceries from that farmer. You know, eventually, that's what we're talking about, right?
You're building rapport.
You're building a relationship and eventually, I mean, the idea is you're not going to be orange pilling ranchers. You're going to be one half of a ranching economy, a farming economy in your local jurisdiction. And when that happens, you are the customer. You're the client of choice. Of course, they're going to accept Bitcoin. They're going to accept whatever you want to compensate them with because you've, I'm going to tell you a secret. You drive down the road and see signs that say eggs for $2.50. It costs more than $2.50 to produce those eggs. Those people don't have that sign out there because they're trying to make money. They want to sell eggs. They want you to come. They want to participate in this economy. Let's build it for them.
Ryan, I love the passion, but every time you tap the table, everyone's ears are hearing that.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt.
And like real quick, going back to the education and you know, Bitcoiners are really good at explaining what Bitcoin is, generally speaking, but I've come to find out that they're actually really bad at saying, here's how you actually get set up. Because personally, what I think there's a bit of apprehension. If they go into a place and they say, hey, do you want to accept Bitcoin or do you accept Bitcoin? Can I pay with Bitcoin? What if they say yes? Yes, we would love to. We just don't know how. What I'm finding, like by just talking to a lot of very wholesome, amazing Bitcoiners, is like they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. They'll go, "Oh, you download you download like you can do Blue Wallet or like Moon Wallet and Moon Wallet for like a farmer's market or
the two use.
That's amazing. Moon Wallet's great. But if like if you have a business, like you're walking in some coffee shop and you have employees and you have this other, there's other like needs, and so I just think that this like wave that's coming right now. This momentum that's being built, and I'm seeing it. Maybe this is like Bitcoin circular economy Twitter. Maybe it's like another sect of Twitter.
Yeah, you're in a little bubble.
Yeah, I'm a little
bubble. I'm in the bubble with you. But
I'm seeing it. Like I'm seeing people like say, hey, like I want to accept Bitcoin. How do I do it? And like crickets. Like nobody. And it's like.
So we have, obviously Oshii has been instrumental in at least in the American circular economy momentum that we see happening. Like you download the Oshii app and all of a sudden you have that nice map. I mean, I'm against giving location permissions. You don't have to, but if you want to, you get the little blue dot. Me and Michael have talked about how people like the little blue dot showing where they are and where you can spend Bitcoin. We have our boy Pedro in the chat, on the Matrix chat. And I worked with him, through Bitcoin Magazine because we had for the big conference in Miami, a big aspect was trying to really highlight Bitcoin as a circular economy tool. And there was this Bitcoin Bazaar and we created a one pager on how to onboard, you know, just the straight steps, and was using Moon Wallet with two U's, like how to start accepting Bitcoin without a trusted third party or minimize trusted third party. And then he took that and he made a whole flyer that you can hand out, you can print and you can hand out at farmers markets, because farmers markets seem like a very ideal place to start here. And that is available at bitcoinforlocalbusiness.com. So you go there, it's all open source. You can make your own changes. They have it translated in multiple languages through different contributors that have done it. I know Pedro speaks Spanish, so I think he did the Spanish translation, but I'm pretty sure there's other translations there. But bitcoinforlocalbusiness.com, you go there, download the pamphlet, go to your local farmer's market, obviously shake everybody's hand and hand them that pamphlet. And you don't have to really be too, I think people are a lot of times too pushy. They are. You know, just most people that come into Bitcoin, the first touch, they're not interested. It's usually the second, third touch. So you're just setting, you know, you're just setting some expectations. You're just letting them know that it exists, that it's an option. If they need that option, then they can go seek it out.
What I've found, and this has been a kind of a sequence of events that, you know, I've evolved into, and because I get asked 10 times a day, it's like, how do you go about, you know, orange pilling a rancher? And what I found out is that this is the doctor around here. This is how you do this. You go up to a rancher, you shake his hand or her hand, and you say, hey, educate me, teach me why you do what you do. I want to know more. Please let me understand. What is it that makes you so special in something that is actually so powerful for, you know, all this heritage that you bring to us and, you know, the food supplies that you create for so many families? Once you allow them to educate you first, if you have a rancher that's solid within what they do, their protocol is basically stewarding the land and the cattle themselves, the animal themselves, they're going to be very proud about what they're going to say. They're going to be very humble, of course, but they're going to educate you because they put 24/7, 365. That's all they do. They're up at 4 o'clock in the morning. They stay up till 11, 12 o'clock at night, and they do it all over again. They don't ask for a lot of fanfare. So once you find a rancher that will speak to you and educate you, guess what? All that conversation leads into decentralization of thought, and then it all leads into Bitcoin. You don't have to talk about Bitcoin. They start talking about Bitcoin in their own way. then that's how you approach Bitcoin. You never have to go up to a rancher and say, hey, do you accept Bitcoin? That is the worst thing that you can do. And it's not anything. It's just we're learning as we're going. And if you can take that approach, it's kind of a very good social engineering way to bring a lot of positivity to their lives to where they go, holy shit. Now I understand why you're shilling me this damn Bitcoin, because you know what? They've been living this way forever. And I always tell everybody moving forward from here, we're going to have a legacy rancher that's been doing this for 4 decades. He's going to understand Bitcoin and he's going to innovate Bitcoin more than a lot of Bitcoiners are. And once we can understand and untap and uncover all of that hidden food intelligence that these ranchers bring to the table, they're going to innovate even more moving forward within the beef initiative. And that's exciting because you look at, you know, Cole Bolton, you look at Jason Rick out at Rick Ranches in Colorado. I mean, these guys are innovating with the soil and they're already innovating within the Bitcoin itself because they're leveraging Bitcoin in two different ways, two different ranchers, but how they're accessing and how they're obtaining Bitcoin, how they're leveraging Bitcoin. One's a VP of a bank. The other one is a first generational rancher. But guess what? Now they have customers that they're going to have forever, basically in their regional communities. And I always tell everybody, if you have a rancher and you're not sending them Christmas cards every year, then you don't know that rancher well enough. And as Ryan was saying, you know, it's that intimate type of relationship that basically, what is that bridge? What is that bond? Well, it's the decentralized thought. It's the decentralized respect. It's basically having a, you know, that protocol of both the ranching and Bitcoin itself.
So, I mean, Slim, you brought this up. I'm kind of curious on your opinion. Is it all right to send a Christmas card 2 months late? Because usually me and my wife, we have the desire to, but it always comes late. Like we always send them out way late.
Well, it depends on what you say on the card, right? I guess that's
the Merry Christmas in February.
Yeah, exactly.
You send it 2 months later, the price of Bitcoin has gone up dramatically.
Right.
He said, buy Bitcoin.
There you go.
Depends on, you know.
We're really bad about that.
Yeah, we actually made this card 2 months ago. We just forgot to send it.
But don't send a rancher a NFT of a cow. How's that?
No,
or a Christmas card.
We would never do that.
No.
Just a late Christmas card. That's
there
all.
There you go. That's all that matters.
And that's like, there's so much confusion around. I mean, I've had business owners like, well, do you also do like Doge? I'm like, no. But I don't have to, but they're just genuinely curious. Mm-hmm. Like they just don't know. And that's totally fair and reasonable. Like I said, they're
let me give a comparison right here. Okay, most ranchers, of course, now, you know, farmers, ranchers, they have a phone, right? Okay, they carry it around. Sometimes they're taking a picture of, you know, what they're doing on that day. Well, for those hours that I said before, they don't have these devices in their hands. Some of them might be, you know, freaking cattle report on right. AM radio. Some of them might be doing a podcast. They don't have the amount of time that a lot of us in this centralized world that we're still maneuvering around, it's a different world. Until you know that world and can respect that world, that's whenever you understand how you can communicate what you're trying to communicate and what you're trying to educate. And once you can kind of understand that there are people out there that are living in the past because they have to. They have to be detached from all this noise because they have so much that they're accomplishing every day to where if they went in there and did amount of research that we all have done in the Bitcoin space, they wouldn't be ranchers right now. So once again, that's our ownership, that's our obligation and our privilege to be able to go out there and communicate to them in the right way. And as far as moving forward, what Michael and I have done right now, and this has been like the last 6 or 7 months, how do you onboard? How do you do this? And it's been a tough battle because what we have to do now is Michael has designed a referral code. And what it is, it's going to be something that, you know, within Oshi, I'll be able to share a link to anybody right now. And they can take this referral code that I'm going to launch tonight after we get done with here at at the new Bitcoin Park is that anybody across the freaking nation now can take this referral code from the OSHI app that Michael has designed and engineered, and they can go out there and do exactly what we've been talking about. And as far as how mine is kind of set up, it's my profile. It's Texas Slim. And what people need to understand, exactly what they see tonight is exactly what they can do for themselves. They can brand themselves so they can go out there and help the rancher save their brand as who they are.
So, I mean, me and Michael have gone back and forth on this. Historically, I've been very anti-RefLink.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly in the grander crypto industry, it's usually used to encourage the shilling of bad projects. Mm-hmm. You see, like, the influencer types on Twitter will just, if anyone gives them a ref link, like, that's their favorite exchange, or that's their favorite project, or that's their favorite whatever the fuck they're shilling. Michael has convinced me that there's positive elements to ref link. The only ref link I've ever shilled was my OSHI ref link. I did feel a little bit dirty afterwards, but that was an accomplishment on his part. Michael, you want to talk a little bit about, because we were talking off air about people not wanting to spend Bitcoin and that these different incentives, I mean, you have Sats back, you have the ref links, like how they are actually kind of building this momentum and pushing us forward.
Yeah. So I guess first I'll just talk about the ref link from the perspective where Slim's coming from. So right now we're basically like, hey, if you don't know how to get businesses set up to accept Bitcoin, like, I've been doing this a long time. I've played around with all the tools. Like, I know the tools. Oh, if you're an e-com business, all right, use this. If you're just a small mom and pop shop, you know, use Moon. Like, if you're literally at a farmer's market, and if the business is open, you're there. And if it's closed, you're not, like, or sorry, if you are there, it's open. If you are not there, it is closed. Like, you run the show. Yeah, use Moon. Like, there's all these different tools.
But always on versus not always on.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. You know, so a lot of people don't know that. And I guess, you know, I've been a little too humble. Like, I didn't realize that a lot of people didn't know that. So what we started doing is we're like, hey, just give them this link. They're going to fill out a little form and we're going to contact them and we're going to hold their hand. We'll do it for free. If they get on OSHI and they want to promote their business on OSHI, OSHI is just a tool for that. We're going to get them set up. We get a bunch of businesses set up with IBEX, because that is like the best tool for the majority of like mom and pop shop businesses that we've found. If they get on OSHI, great. If they don't, cool. I just got a business set up and maybe whenever they're ready, they'll want to promote that they accept Bitcoin, right? And so in which case, you know, if they get on OSHI and you give them that ref link, like that email is going to be connected to you as an individual. So if that business starts selling stuff on OSHI, you're going to get a commission off of that. So we're just trying not to incentivize people to shill OSHI, but to incentivize people to shill Bitcoin,
to and onboard get
businesses
merchants
to right. accepting Bitcoin. Right. And then, you know, from there, it's all about the incentives. I think, I mean, the credit card industry, 2010, there was only 5% of people, like online commerce, which is what kind of the majority of those payment methods were for that early on, was only 5% in 2010. So the credit card companies were like, we got to pump these numbers up. Like, so they
started. But so you're saying 5% of what, global or American transactions?
So in the US,
credit cards?
In the US in 2010, only 5% of retail commerce transactions were done online. And I would say, like, you know, the 2000s, like 2000, 2010, majority, I mean, I feel like majority of people were using the credit cards for online commerce. Like, we started seeing Amazon, like, boom.
Because you can't pay with cash online, period.
Right, yeah. And so it was just 5% of sales, though. But, you know, back in 2010, now it's about 15, which still isn't very high. So it just
You would
goes,
think it was higher.
Yeah, you'd think it was higher. I mean, people are still using their cards everywhere.
Right. We see businesses going cashless, card only.
Right, right. But it's not like an actual online transaction. So the thing that, how I view it, you know, these cards had to incentivize individuals to like drop the cash and basically make sure that Visa and MasterCard and card issuers and payment processors got a cut out of every single transaction everywhere. Not the 5%, but they want to get that 95%. They want to get the rest. So they used incentives. You swipe your card, you get 1% back. You get, maybe you get 2% back. Maybe if you get 10 cards and you pay it off every month and you spend $300 on this card this month and, you know, $1,000 on this card this month, we'll give you an extra $100. Like, they trained us because, I mean, whenever the cards first came out, the experience wasn't very good. It is now. It's pretty damn good now, but it's very costly too. It's costly for the business, and the consumer is just paying more and getting a little sliver back in rewards. With Lightning, what we have the option to do is to use that same incentive structure to like weaponize Bitcoin evangelism. Like, we can say, hey, look, get this farmer on. I mean, in theory, like, instead of, you know, you can get a little bit of that cut instead of Visa. You can keep it local. You can keep everything local, right? So that's just kind of how I view it. I mean, we have to do incentives. People don't want to spend their Bitcoin. And if they have their debit card, that's getting 1% back. And
it's like the bare minimum. You have to hit that 1% threshold.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think personally, I think it's going to have to be higher right now. People that are always using their cards, they're probably not going to like just start using Bitcoin if they get 1% back. But fortunately, businesses are always running promotions of some sort. And instead of doing a discount,
I mean, you've been pretty aggressive with it. I've seen some businesses give like 50% sats back.
They were aggressive. That's just what they wanted to do.
That's up to the individual business.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not me. No, it's them. I mean, occasionally we'll do something special.
That's a flip of the script, right? Because like card companies, it's always it's top down. The card company picks exactly what the rewards are.
So, and again, it's almost like, no, don't worry though. Like, these business owners can give you like coffee points and square stars and all this bullshit that no one wants, right? And they lock the businesses out of that, right? It's top down currently, but we can do this bottom up. These businesses want to run promotions. I go to a business, they do like, if you spend like, I guess $50, they'll give you $5 like in their own credit. That's 10%. Right. Like, Visa's not giving 10% on shit. Not at this small business, right? They want to do that. Lightning can empower them and give them the option to do that, right? So Oshi's just a tool to help usher that along. We're not the payment provider. If they want to use BTC Pay, use BTC Pay.
I think that's what's cool about Oshi, is that you basically give the merchant an option of how they want to accept Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And strictly speaking, between like a sovereign way of accepting Bitcoin versus a hosted way of accepting Bitcoin.
Whatever they want to do. And ultimately,
and there's no conflict there. It's not like you're...
Right. Like I'm not like a competitor with IBEX or OpenNode or BTC. Like, I'm helping merchants realize the positive aspects of accepting Bitcoin, whether or not they actually want to hold it. Like, at least they can start accepting it. Maybe they hold a little bit on their balance sheet. Most of them just hold all of it because it's a small percentage of sales right now. But then they can go and shill their customers, because if they accept a Bitcoin payment, that's cheaper for them.
Right. They're already saving like 3-5%.
Yeah. So,
you might as well pass that on to the customer.
Yeah. They have a financial incentive to start shilling Bitcoin to their customers. And that, again, that's something I don't think people understand. Like, we're so good at shilling amongst ourselves, but get the business owners, get the rancher at the farmer's market to be like, hey, if you pay me in Bitcoin, it's like the cash discount, except it's a Bitcoin discount now, right? Because cash is trash. Like, they do. That's an excellent
cash is
opportunity.
King.
Cash is king. But yeah, so.
Well, let's give an example of that. Let's talk about Cole again there. And Austin, as far as, okay, he's Orangefield. He's accepting Bitcoin for beef, right? Well, he supplies to restaurants in the Austin region. How many restaurants are now that buying beef from Cole Bolton from K&C Cattle? And they're buying beef, basically. Not yet. We're getting closer to where those restaurants are going to start purchasing beef from Cole with Bitcoin as well. Then once that happens through the Oshi app, you can see that this restaurant is basically on the Oshi app. They're buying their beef from Cole. And so the Bitcoiners are going to gravitate to that restaurant. So you have three touch points there that they're trading the circular economy within each other. This is how this is moving forward. Out where Ryan is in Missouri, you have the hay farmer, you have the hay producer. That hay producer is selling to the Mennonites. Mennonites are using it to grow their produce and their animals, and then they're selling that produce and animals to the local retail restaurant. Once again, we get them all basically connected, doing it through Bitcoin, through this decentralized economy, circular economy. It's a no-brainer.
Last piece that's missing there is the rancher being able to buy his supplies in Bitcoin.
Exactly.
Feed stores.
What was that?
Feed stores.
And we're working. Actually, Ryan's got a connection with somebody that's pretty deep into the feed stores, you know, and he's opening a processing plant there in Farmington, St. Francis County. And we just met him. What was that? The day before yesterday, 2 days ago?
Monday.
Yeah, Monday. And this is starting to transpire. That's what's, you know, I told you guys last night at dinner of that little, what's going on in this county of Missouri. It's going on everywhere. We're at the cusp of this. And that's what's exciting. And once we get the visual in people's heads about market access and how market access works from the ground up to retail, to wholesale, to wholesale, to retail, to consumer, market access is something that is never talked about enough in how they're actually attacking market access to animal protein and just food in general right now. This is the best defense that anybody could hope for as far as being the producer or the consumer or the retailer.
I'm just curious, what do you tell folks that are afraid of the volatility?
I tell them that Apple's volatile. I tell them that Amazon crashed 8 times and they lost over 80% of their value. Everything's volatile whenever you're going through innovation. It's basically understanding, you know, in detaching, you know, let's detach from Wall Street, right? And understand what, you know, Bitcoin really is. It's that store of value that they don't understand, but their grandfather understood it. The store of value of a cow was, used to be in the land, or it used to be in the cow, you know, and then you know what the store of the value and most of, a lot of ranchers across the United States is right now. It's in the USDA insurance policy. So at the end of the year, they're having to file an insurance policy because they didn't break even. That's volatile. You know, a drought is volatile. You know, our money in hyperinflation, that's volatile. Bitcoin's not volatile. It's a store of value that basically, if you have the time preference, the patience, and the education, you're not going to call it volatile.
Yeah, and for businesses that are only accepting just a very, very small percentage of their sales in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
well, look at Cole. I mean, he has the right to not tell how much that he's, but he's accepting Bitcoin. So all these Bitcoiners have been buying beef from him, which is fantastic. Well, okay. He just announced yesterday, he's already got a full coin. Okay. Well, if he only wanted to go in and do that 2.7% credit card fee, then that's fine. And that's his, you know, he has that capability and the opportunity to do that. And he's not giving that 2.7 to the credit card companies. If that's their foot in the door, as far as learning how to operate within it, then that's who you start with. And that's the mentality and the whatever they are within their understanding. So there's so many different ways. If it's 10%, if it's 50%, you know, these ranchers have to keep on building a business, but leveraging that percentage that they can decide for themselves instead of somebody like the USDA insurance policy.
Carlino, how do you see the volatility question?
Well, this, so hopefully we will get to the point where it's not a small percentage, right? And so then at that point, it's not just about a portion of your income that you're dedicating to store value and you're able to effectively save for, you know, build generational wealth or whatever your objective is in the long term. But so in the short term, if that amount of your income does start to increase, if your expenses are in dollars, then you do need some kind of exit or conversion service, right? So I'm just wondering how you see that play out. For us in El Salvador, what ended up happening and what the pushback we got from folks is, you know, we need to be able to turn this into dollars into our bank account as quickly as possible, because that's what I use. You know, mm-hmm. I use my checking account. I use, you know, cash. And if it's in my bank account, then I can use it, right? And Visa is offering me that, right? My relationship with Visa is, I'll get a, you know, I'll keep my deposit slips and, you know, collect all the payments that I got, and then I'll have the money in my bank account within 5 business days, give or take, right? we try to beat that so that it's at most 2 business days, but that's what they're used to, right? And so it's offering that choice of being able to choose how much of the transaction, that's, you know, what you can get through IBEX, at least in El Salvador and then in Florida at the moment in the United States, choose how much of that income gets split into Bitcoin versus versus dollars. And it's cheaper. You still get more, you keep more of that value if you keep 100% of the Bitcoin, right? We charge 0.7% to facilitate that and enable you to have as many people as you want receiving payments. But when it does get to a point where a significant chunk of your income is in Bitcoin, but most of your expenses are in dollars, you need to solve that, right? And so I'm just wondering, how have you seen it play out?
Yeah. So yeah, like I said, most of the time I see it just, they just keep the Bitcoin, but yeah, as the sales go up, then they have bills to pay in dollars because their distributors aren't whatever. So, but the cool thing is that that's going to be how it starts. And so right now, like I said, most businesses are just holding it. So then I foresee like, if the sales go up, they're going to start converting a portion of it. Right. But then that means that more and more businesses will be accepting it. So then it's not so much like, look, I mean, what am I supposed to do with this? Like in their mind, I hold it. And what if a bunch of different businesses are accepting it? Then people really have an outlet. Oh, maybe you can pay your producer in Bitcoin. And you don't know what percentage he's converting back to dollars, if any. It doesn't matter. At the very least, they can understand. I mean, it does matter. But at the very least, for now, it's like they can just save on fees at the very least. Like, and if that's what Orange pills them, sounds pretty good.
There's definitely two things here, right? Because the first thing is, Bitcoin is a incredibly scarce asset going through its adoption phase, right? And as a result, you see a lot of the short-term volatility. But as time goes on, as more people start using it, as more people start adopting it, not only should the purchasing power increase, but it should become less volatile. It should become more stable is a funny word because, pretty much nothing in our world is stable, especially not our money right now, but it should become the most stable money we've ever seen. That's still a long way, a little bit off, Yeah. And then the other side is kind of what Michael said, which is, what percent are you actually bringing in Bitcoin? And I've seen this firsthand because I kind of kept one foot in the fiat world for a while. In the last 2 years, I've basically become, 99% earning in Bitcoin. The majority of my earnings is in Bitcoin. And I would be lying if I didn't say, fortunately I have a cushion, but I'd be lying if I didn't say like it hurt more this drop, even though this drop is less percentage wise than other drops I've been through. But going from 69,000 to, I don't know, that one day we went to 25K or whatever, I was like, damn, I'm poor now. It's just like, and fortunately I had that cushion, right? But if you don't have that cushion and 100% of your earnings are coming in Bitcoin, you got to be careful. You need to do some risk management there, right?
And I also wanted to say there's an additional danger to that, at least in terms of what I'm seeing in El Salvador, is that that's a need. And when the market needs that, in the case of El Salvador, when they were forced into it, yeah, right? What has resulted is, and what the government chose to do was to offer this instant conversion into dollars on a government wallet, which we refer to as Chivo dollars, right? And so if Bitcoiners aren't thinking about how to solve for that from the get-go, right, someone else will, and there's probably going to be a centralized solution that will kind of take over the market if the adoption is so fast that there's not enough time for decentralized solutions to pop up for folks, right? So that, let's say, a rancher knows a guy that's willing to, pay his supplier's bill for a Bitcoin discount, right? It's like if those relationships aren't built in advance of when that wave of adoption comes in, suddenly what happens is you have this essentially monopoly of a centralized service providing that for folks. And that's, I'm just here to caution that there's, I understand why in the case of El Salvador, you kind of had to have that. But the reality, now what we're struggling with is, I go to a gas station. I was just there like 10 days ago. We went to a gas station that literally Bitcoin accepted here. It said, paga tu gasolina con tus bitcoins. They even said, had it in plural, bitcoins in plural, right?
That's not the real plural, but continue.
It was hilarious.
There's no S at the end.
So, of course, so we were just, we're stopping here, and when we go out with a person, we say, all right, so we want to pay for the gas. She shows us this Chivo dollar QR code, which doesn't run on Lightning, and we tell the lady, it's like, that's, can you charge me in actual Bitcoin? See, in Chivo, you have this like convoluted process of finding how to actually make the Lightning invoice. She says, oh no, just turn your Bitcoin into dollars and pay me with the dollars. Duh. And I was like, well, but I'm not Salvador, and I don't have your centralized dollar app. You know, I need to pay you in Bitcoin. And your sign clearly says that I can. And she said, no. And so she finally understood. She said, no. We, the order from on high is we're not accepting that anymore. And so it kind of, they created this other problem now where now everyone's on this dollar Chivo system, and because of this volatility need that everyone had. And so now we have the additional barrier of, now I have to explain to this person and re-educate them that that's not Bitcoin, that this other thing is actually Bitcoin, right? And so just a cautionary tale that if adoption happens too fast and you're not thinking of those problems and looking at ways of leveraging that decentralized network to create solutions for them as they happen, then maybe there will be this like other problems that
sure,
I'm not saying they're worse, I'm just saying it's a new problem.
That's one of the reasons why I like how you guys structure your fees as well, because it's like, look, if you want dollars, go through the KYC, it's a pain in the ass, you're gonna get charged higher. But if you want Bitcoin, you just paste in your on-chain address and there's no KYC and it's really cheap to process the payment. That's why with OG2, like, we have all the different providers, because we want to make sure that businesses have the option to like, so that, because there's a lot of lock-in in the traditional system. Like, you have your bank.
Well, that's why it's pretty noble of Carlino to say that, right? Because IBEX is one of the centralized dollar providers, right? So it goes against their lock-in. Where, like, if right, like, that is, you're almost saying, like, we don't want to become one of those centralized providers, but we can offer you that option if you want to.
Of course, yeah, we want to create the incentives where people actually use Bitcoin, right? Like, it's if you push people into Bitcoin, then we hope naturally that'll happen, right? And
it's a natural incentive.
And some folks would tell us, if you educate people, they'll end up on BTC Pay server and they'll set up their own node. And it's like, that would be fantastic. Yeah. We want our clients to become, such Bitcoiners that they're going to end up creating, their own Lightning node and connecting their channel to us and, helping us with liquidity. That's also, that's why, yes, it's very important that we within the industry understand that we're in this together, right? It's much more important to get everyone on this side and grow the pie than it is to squabble over the scraps that we barely have going around for us, right? So but as a cautionary tale down in El Salvador, it's if you don't think ahead of the kinds of problems that your rancher is going to face, someone else is going to solve it for them, right? And then it might even be harder to pull them back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's they deal with all that kind of volatility and manipulation. Everybody always, they have all these concerns about the rancher from the outside looking in. Well, I guarantee you the rancher knows all the volatility he lives with every day, and that's why they're very powerful once they get that education, because they can see, they know what true volatility is. And, right now, let's look at the cattle industry in the United States. A lot of people don't realize that the last 2 years have depleted a lot of inventory out of our supply in the United States. Nobody's really talking about it because people don't understand the industry. You want to talk about volatility, it's coming, and it's going to come to our food supplies. And every rancher that I've talked to in the last 2 weeks, they said, you better get ready. You let everybody know, get ready, because this is going to hit, and it's going to hit hard. That's volatility when you can't feed your family. And so, we squabble about certain things, and I always like to bring perspective into where we are within the innovation of Bitcoin right now, transactional Bitcoin, right? Where you can peer-to-peer transact. You know how many years it took to buy a pair of damn shoes on the internet before you could buy a pair of shoes? You know, that was a lot of things that we had to go through, a lot of technology stacks, a lot of layers, a lot of confidence, a lot of trust building. And look at us now, you know, it's no brainer. In the beginning, it wasn't like that. And so if we can bring that perspective in and identify those touch points that we need to be keep on pushing within this wave of innovation, it's going to happen. And, you know, that's why we have these conversations. And that's why we ask these questions.
The only way to figure that stuff out,
yes,
is just do it.
Just get your ass into it.
That's the most important thing about all this.
Mm-hmm.
Just like get out there, break shit. We don't have to, we're not breaking Bitcoin. right like get out there, test different things. That's where it's getting really exciting. Like, yeah. I hope everyone understands that, like, it really is kind of coming together, and the innovation is,
well, look how far you and I have come from the day one, and what Cole had to go through. There was pain points there, and we had to really nurture the relationship with Cole, saying, we know this sucks right now, it does suck, we apologize, but hang in there with us. And it was because he trusted us and we had established that relationship. Man, this is a slow roll into innovation, but you're having to move very fast and you're having to iterate every day. It's iteration after iteration. We get beat up every day from the cattle industry itself into the financial world itself and within Bitcoin. You know, we battle a lot. I mean, we get hit, you know, every day with new things, people within the community itself, you know, coming after us. You have success, you know, that's volatile, you know, and we have to nurture that relationship to where it doesn't seem volatile, but we know it is.
Yeah. Volatility. I was thinking a lot about the question. It's a hard question. But like Slim said, everything's about to get real volatile. Everything's about to get real volatile. My phone's full of messages from local producers in my area right now about they're raising their prices. Everybody's raising their prices. Everybody's worried about raising prices on their eggs, raising prices on their milk. But it's just going to happen. And we've seen it happen in a couple of industries, housing, auto. You know, people are going to forget what a carton of eggs is supposed to cost. And at that point, At that point, Bitcoin seems a lot less volatile. So I personally, and you know, in our community, we haven't pushed Bitcoin on the community. You really use the Beef Initiative as a shield. Like, hey, we are here to fix the local supply chain, to build a local initiative around our food. And the Bitcoin kind of comes as subtextual, you know, this producer we met with Monday, mm-hmm. He called me yesterday morning and kind of worked into the conversation. Hey, by the way, that guy was wearing a Bitcoin shirt, Slim. What is that? Is that part of what you guys do? And I got a real good opportunity to kind of go over what I believe Bitcoin is, which is a fundamental change in our trade structure around local economies. And he gets that. He trades, you know. I live in a small rural town, Farmington. You can drive through my town and see the Farmington Exchange. You know what that is? Corn, wheat, seed. That's been there a lot longer than any other buildings in my town. And it's such a perfect fit, the Bitcoin and ranching thing, that you almost, I think, will fall. These guys are going to fall down the rabbit hole without knowing it. That's been my experience.
Yeah. It happens. I mean, it happens with that, you know, just that ongoing conversation of basically, you know, how do we source our food? How do we steward our land, and how do we protect our heritage, our relationships within our communities? We don't have to be divided anymore. And it just comes to it. It comes to it naturally. All of us in this room right now are, you know, we didn't know each other, you know, 7 months ago. Bottom line. Well, this is something that happens whenever you actually, you know, as we started this cast, is that we present this handshake and we continue with the conversation, you know, and that's why I'm here in Nashville. I mean, it's to meet people. It's to, you know, Matt and I are talking, we're going to have a freaking headquarters of the Beef Initiative here in Nashville. That's going to create a lot of conversation, a lot of innovation within here in Tennessee. I want to duplicate everything that we've done in Texas that Michael and I have been able to achieve with the team, the teams that we have, everybody that's helped us out. We're about to do it in Tennessee. It's going to happen a lot quicker now. And once this starts happening, that is that snowball effect. And here we go. And, you know, it's wonderful to have, you know, Matt and, you know, the Nash Coiners here, because I feel so freaking, you know, confident right now, a lot longer or better than I was like 6 to 7 months ago. And, you know, it's a good feeling. I mean, I don't feel any volatility right now. I just feel opportunity. And, you know, with that, that's what needed people out there that are listening right now. This is about opportunity. We're going to punch through a lot of bullshit that's happening in our lives right now. And it's time to really kind of step up and put your compass in the right direction here and quit, you know, quit parroting all the freaking fear porn and all that noise out there. And let's start really working together. Let's focus on the right bullshit instead of evolving the fear porn, like I say, to where it kind of handcuffs us. And we don't need to be handcuffed right now, man. We're innovating. We're having success, man. We're changing people's lives. You know how many people call me up every day and say, hey, man, I got a freezer. Half of it's full, man. I'm feeding my family for the next year. You want to talk about freaking empowerment, you know, whenever you can. I tell everybody, if you stack your freezer, you're going to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning opening that door and looking at that freezer. And it happens. I'm getting people say, you're damn right. It does happen.
I guess, I mean, that's one way of hedging against Bitcoin's purchasing power volatility, is that if you have beef, I mean, that mm-hmm. beef will always feed you. That same amount of beef will always feed you and your family.
Isn't that the best defense right now in our society? As long as you're eating pure animal protein, nutrition. I mean, our nutritional starvation in this country and across the world is a freaking epidemic right now. I mean, and people don't understand. We won't go in on this cast about the true food intelligence that's needed moving forward. But yeah, I mean, while everybody's falling apart, you're feeding your family and you're eating correctly. You don't have that that food insecurity, you know, anxiety that most of this country is already, you know, that's all you hear about now. There's going to be, you know, there's fertilizer shortages, there's grain shortages, you know, there's a war on beef. This crap is happening. And if you can have that freezer full, you know, take care of your family. My father has a freezer full. My mother has a freezer full. I have access to two other freezers that are full right now. I don't worry about food. I brought, you know, 8 ribeyes here today that we're going to eat for lunch. And so that feels pretty good.
Ryan, you got something to add over there?
I'm sitting here taking notes. You're right. You know, the volatility is an issue. The notes I'm taking are, we're going to build the first circular economy. And the steps there, you know, beef, fertilizer, soil producers, and exchange. I think if we can close the loop, and this is me just thinking out loud right now, but if somebody can close the loop, then your problem just went away. If I can denominate eggs and milk locally, if I can set that price point in sats and advertise it compared to the Fed, I think that'd be powerful. And if you could offer that first circular exchange, I mean, what a model.
Yeah, and echoing what Michael said earlier, just the importance of just getting out there. It's like, it's volatile now if we're all dangling kind of on our own without having access to this, you know, network of you know, creating that circular economy. But if you tie those webs in your community and build stronger bonds, then you're not affected by the volatility as much. You're just, the strength of the folks around you are the ones that really, you know, help push you through. But we gotta, you know, you gotta get out there and start doing it, right? Because otherwise, you know, the headwinds are coming, and your house might get blown out, right? So it's like, hurry up.
Yeah, let me just tell like a brief story, just to give people an idea, like how it is important just to get out there. So I was sitting down with the owner of a business in Austin, and we were actually like at another business though. We went to like this coffee shop, the Meteor. And I didn't have any, I wasn't planning on onboarding both of them at the same time, but this business owner was like, hey, have you heard about this thing? Like, we can accept Bitcoin and we can do this. And he's like, no, like, you're going to accept Bitcoin? And the business owner's like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And he's like, you should do it too. And then he's like, okay. So now this particular coffee shop, it's called the Meteor. It's an awesome. We go there every Tuesday morning and evening, and we bring anywhere from, like, sometimes it's like 5 people, sometimes it's 20. And they all pay in Bitcoin generally. And now they're going to be accepting Bitcoin for their bike, because they have like a bike shop too. Because there was a
big Austin thing, like all the coffee shops have bike shops.
Yeah. Now there's a Bitcoiner in Austin who's like, oh man, my bike got stolen. Let's talk to them about accepting Bitcoin for bikes. And seems like they're going to be doing that. I know they're getting. I know they're talking with Annalise from Ibex, I think. And so, and then I went to the barbershop next door, and I'm like, hey, you know, have you had anybody come in? Again, just try to insert it in. Have you had anybody come in here try to pay with Bitcoin? And he just looked at me. He's like, what's Bitcoin? And I was like, all right, we got work to do, man.
Yeah, we're still early.
But, you know, that stuff spreads.
Yeah, I was in Paducah, Kentucky this morning. I was in Paducah, Kentucky this morning and bumped into the city commissioner, because I was talking about Bitcoin while I was paying for my coffee at this coffee shop. And we connected. It happens.
So guys, this has been an absolutely fantastic conversation. It's been humbling to be a part of it with all of you. We have Bitcoiners coming in from all across the Midwest and the rest of the country for Nash Bitcoiners later. They're flowing into Bitcoin Park right now. The door just opened with two of them. So we should get ready for that. I like to end these conversations with final thoughts. So Carlino, we'll start with you. Final thoughts.
I'm just excited about this starting to happen in the United States, because I think it's the shining beacon on the hill has to come from this part of the world. And I'm not surprised that it's going to be from the South and from Texas. And it's just happy to be along for the ride. So let's fucking go.
Thanks, Carlino. Michael, final thoughts.
Yeah, so I just can't stress enough. People really need to, let's say, first educate themselves on the tools that are available for businesses, whether you're a medium-sized business or a micro business, to start accepting Bitcoin. Start playing around with these tools. Start getting a feel for them so that whenever the time comes and you feel is a good time to, you know, shill some Bitcoin payments, you'll be ready. Because there's definitely this wave coming, and I'm seeing it personally, and I sure as hell am not going to be able to do it all myself. Like, I'm sitting here in Austin, like, I have so many leads out the wazoo. Like,
if anyone could do it himself, it's Michael, though.
Yes.
Like, seriously, everybody, you know, this is a distributed, decentralized movement. This is grassroots, bottom up, not top down. We need everybody to do their part. You know, some companies even have incentives out there for you to onboard these businesses. So get out there and do it.
Awesome. Thank you, Michael.
We're going to be putting out content on how to do it. Okay. So I'm going to start a podcast.
You're going to start a podcast?
Specifically,
I would love to come on your podcast.
Yes. It's specifically about, not so much about the theory. It's called the B-Commerce Podcast. We have the first episode out, but it's going to be about very practical information for business owners, and then people that want to teach business owners how to accept Bitcoin, how do you hold it, you know, what services can you connect to, what about Shopify, what about... Those are really, maybe for some really simple like Q&As, but it's powerful. So that's our focus. Just keep an eye out for that. I think that'll be, because we talked a lot, but frankly, we didn't get in too much about literally how.
Right.
So that's the niche I'm trying to
fill. Truly, Michael, if I can help in any way, just let me know.
Hell yeah. Sounds good.
Ryan, final thoughts.
Yeah, man, I think our beef initiative in Missouri is real focused on local food distribution in as guerrilla a way as possible. Just decentralize access to your local supply chain. And anybody who's working on that, I'd like to talk to. We need help. We've been doing this for a while. It's a big problem. You can pick up your steaks, your milk, your eggs, but lowering the threshold of convenience is going to be necessary for mass local adoption. We built a stage right across the street from our county courthouse. We plan on being hyper focused on food distribution over the next year.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Dude, it's been a pleasure to meet you. I look forward to getting to know you better and working with you going forward.
He's Satoshi.
Yeah. I was like, this dude. I hate when people introduce themselves as Satoshi. You know how many times I get that?
For Satoshi, just to be clear.
And then he's like, is this the Bitcoin house? But honestly, it's been a pleasure to meet you, and I'm glad you got to join us for this conversation.
Well, thank you.
Slim, final thoughts.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. It's not daunting if you can get focused. Within the Beef Initiative itself, the best place to understand and see and to review what we're doing is just beefinitiative.com. We're having our second conference in Colorado. It's July 22nd to through 24. It's a 3-day conference. It's going to be extremely badass. We have all kinds of great speakers. Go check that out. We just started an educational series for the rancher, and we're directing it right at the why of Bitcoin for the North American rancher. The Texas to Tennessee tour, it starts off today. It's starting right now with this conversation. So it's up and running. Go check everything out. You know, make your own decisions where you want to kind of jump into the Beef Initiative ethos. And contact us. Come along for the ride. Let's get a Beef Initiative headquarters in every state. You and I, Matt, we're going to be moving very, very fast and very strong with this. And Tennessee is going to catch up to Texas. And it's time to kick it off today.
I'm excited, Slim. Just getting started. We're going to do big things.
Hell yeah, man! This is going to be good times.
Carlino, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to. What's the website for your educational program?
Sure. So we are collaborating with myfirstbitcoin.io, where we've built the Bitcoin Diploma. You can find more information about them. They're the first Bitcoin-only nonprofit in El Salvador, and we'll have some more information out soon. By September, we hope to open source the curriculum out so that anyone that wants to help get more kids educated or themselves can just use it. But we're testing it out in the classroom as we speak. And myfirstbitcoin.io, they're our partners, and IBEX, you can find us on the web.
Awesome. I just want to thank our guests once again for joining us. I want to thank the audience for listening and supporting the show. Reminder, you can support the show at citadeldispatch.com or by using a podcasting 2.0 app such as Fountain or Breeze. If you do a boostagram through there, I will be reading the highest ones or sometimes all of them depending on my mood every episode. And I really do appreciate your support. We're moving quick here at Bitcoin Park and the first ever Bitcoin TV studio. Literally, as you're recording, my co-founder, Rod, walked in with a brand new mic and a brand new mic stand. So we are going to be moving very quickly here. The next chapter has begun, and I appreciate you all for being a part of it. Very excited for Nash Bitcoiners tonight. We're expecting over 200 people. If you've never been in town, consider coming next month. Love you all. Stay humble, stack sats.